Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we'll be reading The Wolf and the Raven, Part 3. It's from a collection of stories called 54 Sleepless Nights by Tobias Wade. If you like this story, and you like the other ones you've listened to, consider picking yourself up a copy of the book. And if you do, let me know in the comments of wherever you can leave comments, and I would like to say thank you. Let's get started. Hardly a word was spoken between us as we wound through the icy mountain road once more. Hank drove with grim determination while Dr. Olsky made one phone call after another from the back seat. I didn't need to ask to know he was trying to call people he knew in town. The first three attempts only found an answering machine, while the fourth picked up to a guttural, snarling reply like something halfway between a man and a wolf. We all listened to the halting, growling words, which were not words for a few seconds before Dr. Olsky ended the call. He did not make a fifth attempt. "Is your wife all right?" I asked, dreading the answer. Then hurriedly, "At least the wolves weren't attacking people." "That's because there are no people left to attack," Dr. Olsky replied somberly. "Whatever is happening to the wolves is happening to the people too." "You're not saying that they're all dead, are you?" Hank asked, his eyes alternating between the road and the raven flying overhead. "They're moving, aren't they? I don't think we'll make any sense of this phenomenon while clinging to such primitive superstitions as life and death. They've become something else entirely."
"We could just keep driving," I ventured meekly. "Never look back. Never speak of it. Or we could call for help and maybe they could send in the National Guard or something."
But Dr. Olsky was shaking his head. "It was one thing when it was just the wolves, but it's spreading. Do you want to see what it's like for a host of armed men to start howling like the devil? No, the Raven is looking out for us. She will show us what we need to know, and then we can decide from there." The storm was growing fiercer by the time the Raven stopped. The wind was enough to whip the snow diagonally across the mountain slope, and the dead branches of the looming trees did nothing to protect us from the elements. The Raven huddled against a trunk to shield from the wind, croaking feebly with exhaustion as we cautiously exited the jeep.
"Thank you, love. You've kept us safe,"
Dr. Olsky said to the bird, his words dispersed by the wind into the gathering night. And then he cupped his hands and caught at it, a long, harsh sound that set my teeth on edge. The Raven launched from the branch at once to settle near a small indentation in the snow on the ground.
"Why do you keep doing that?" I asked, though I was afraid to speculate the reason.
I was almost relieved when Dr. Olsky didn't answer, and instead stomped his way to the indentation in the snow, where he began to sweep the heel of his boot to clear the ice and snow. A small opening began to form by the time Hank and I joined him. I looked around for the Raven, but the bird was nowhere to be seen amidst the spinning eddies of snow. Then glancing back, just in time to see the old professor down on his hands and knees, and then flat onto his stomach as he crawled his way into the narrow opening he had made in the ground. Hank clutched his rifle to his chest as he dropped to the ground to crawl after him, and I knew I had no choice but to follow. Once I got past the initial claustrophobia of the small opening, it felt good to know the route was too narrow for one of the monstrous wolves to follow us without a good deal of digging. The air was rapidly growing warmer as well, and soon the space began to open wider as the ice and snow around us gave way to rock and frozen mud. Hank turned on a flashlight up ahead that he was holding with his teeth, and every once in a while he'd glance back to check on me. The next flash of light startled me when it revealed the rock had seamlessly given way to a clean white tiling, like one might find in a hotel bathroom. The space widened considerably after that, and soon the three of us were able to comfortably stand in the widening cave.
"This is no lair," Hank spoke first, his voice cracking from the strain.
I stared incredulously at the padded armchair in the corner of the room, at the walls lined with shelves stuffed with musty leather-bound books cramming the place from floor to ceiling. Dr. Olsky strode across the room to the lamp beside the chair, and turning it on revealed the extent of the comfortable study. There was a large wooden desk on the opposite end, its surface cluttered with glass jars where floating jawbones, eyes, and other drifting organs were suspended in a thick yellowish fluid. Some looked like they belonged to animals, while others looked disturbingly familiar to those I encountered within human cadavers during my own studies.
"I told you I never intended you to come here, Sarah,"
Dr. Olsky said as he crossed the room to sit in the wooden chair behind the desk.
"I told you not to search for the lair, but you have taken after me too strongly, never knowing when you have gone too far."
Stretching, pawing, sniffing, behind us the way we crawled in, had the wolves found us already?
I saw Hank tense as he heard it as well, and he instinctively swung his rifle toward the sound. Then readjusting, he pointed the gun at Dr. Olski.
"You've been hiding too much, old man," the hunter growled. "What do you know about this place?"
"I know that the wolves really did live here once," Dr. Olski mused, lowering himself to stare into one of the glass jars containing the lower half of a jaw. The teeth were too large and pointed to be human, but neither were they of sufficient length to belong to a wolf.
"I never intended for them to end up like this, though," the professor continued with resignation. "I thought I could keep them alive as I flayed one nerve, one muscle, one layer of tissue at a time until I found the line between life and death, or replacing one tissue with another, subtly changing one living form to another."
The scratching was growing closer outside, and then a howl, low and throaty, although whether it came from a man or a beast I could not tell. But the university kept calling for me to return, and my research was going too slowly. Dr. Olski sighed. "I thought I could hasten my results by inserting a virus to automate some of my slowest alterations. I never thought it was possible for the humans to begin to change. For my wife."
"Call them off," Hank pleaded,
his rifle swaying between Dr. Olski and the entrance we crawled through.
"Give them the antidote, whatever it is to make them stop."
But Dr. Olski only shook his head, a wistful smile tugging at the corners of his white beard.
"You too have eaten the meat and dwelled amidst the curse. I see you shaking already. Do not fight the transformation. The end is nothing to be feared when the distinction between life and death has been destroyed."
The frozen ground leading into the lair collapsed from the digging in a rush of snow and bitter wind. The gun went off, the reverberating blast magnifying in the enclosed space, so that its echoes merged with unearthly howls. The bullet pulverized the jaw of the wolf that made it through first, but its cold yellow eyes never blinked as it continued its lunge.
"Don't fight them!"
Dr. Olski shouted, the tension in his voice making it sound almost like the cawing of the raven once more.
"They are your brothers!"
Paws and hands, side by side, clawing the earth, as the wolves and humans from the town swarmed into the small chamber, clamoring over each other on all fours. The matted fur and filthy winter coats really did seem to flow together, one creature no different than the next. The howls rose in their throats, the timbers weaving and merging into one, the blasphemous ensemble of the living dead. The gun went off again, and this time it was the professor who staggered back against the wall. He stared down at the bullet in his stomach, gingerly lifting his shirt to inspect the damage. The small, neat hole was wedged between two of his ribs, spreading a network of cracks through his body as though he was made of ice. Revealed, too, was the thick patches of fur and twisted feathers which covered most of the professor's body.
"Death has come to us," Dr. Olski howled with a maniacal glee. "Do not fight your nature."
There was nothing I could do but press myself to the shelves of books and close my eyes. To bear the wave of howls and screams belonging to neither man nor beast, the living nor the dead. The frozen bodies piling into the room brought no heat, but rather seemed to drain it from the place until everything, even my thoughts, had grown numb. And then in the pit of my misery and despair, a sound unlike the others broke through the madding fray. The croaking, cawing of the raven, untainted by the deforming influence, pure and natural and insistent. The cawing continued as the maelstrom grew around me. When at last I found the courage to open my eyes, I saw the broken and bloody stump of a tail disappearing back up the tunnel. The clean white tiles were ruined with filth and blood, but the den was otherwise empty. Both Hank and Dr. Olski must have followed the pack back to the surface. Slowly, carefully, as though afraid each movement would cause my body to shatter, I followed them through the tunnel, into the stillness of the waiting night. The wind had stopped, though the snow was falling harder now. I heard the cawing of the raven again, this time farther off. Then the answer cry of howls as the monstrous pack of animals followed the bird's lead. I don't know for sure, but I think the bird must have been Mrs. Olski's wife, doing all she could to bring me to this place where I might set things right. I stood there a long time, watching the snow fill in our tracks, then retreating back into the profane lair, I let the snow conceal the entrance and seal me away from the world I dare not return to. How could I risk ever going back to civilization, knowing I could spread the curse with me wherever I went? Let the unnatural pack prowl through the dead trees, Let them wander until the wind and the snow grinds them into dust. I will stay, and I will study, hoping that one day I find the secrets that have eluded my professor and reverse the changes. Or learning not, to spend forever here, between life and death, my eternal curse to be the ignorance of their difference.
That's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know in the comments, like the video, the episode, wherever you are, and let the platforms know that this is some good storytelling. If you did enjoy it, though, and you'd like to support the channel, you can do so on Patreon. I'd really appreciate that. And a huge shout out to you, if you are a patron, for being a patron. I appreciate it. And if you'd like to chat with us, come join our Discord. It's a fun little place. I think you'd enjoy yourself there. With all that said, I hope you have enjoyed this story. We will see you in the next one.